here today with Gab Gonsalves, former CEO of People Answers, acquired by Infor. As a CEO, Gab always brought a deep analytical focus to all aspects of running his business, and he's been part of the George & Partners conference today, running a SaaS outcomes workshop for us. Gab, we're pleased to have you with us here today on our podcast to talk about that.
Thank you, John. Glad to be here.
Well, this was interesting. The genesis of this workshop actually was your reflection of the exit you had with People Answers. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Founder and CEO of People Answers, a predictive analytics HR company that we ran a process in late 2013 and got an exit in 2014 that we were very happy about. So we, at the time, you know, 2013 timeframe, companies in my space were exiting at now 3.5-4 times revenue, and we ran a process and we got 10 offers above 4.5 times revenue, and 2 offers above 7 times revenue. So I had an opportunity to kind of reflect on what drove the higher valuations, and kind of test it out, talk to different PEs and investors and strategic guys, and really kind of distilled down to just 6 principles that as part of the talk that I did for George and today.
Gab, you had the team spend a lot of time on value proposition development and understanding what it is and then how it might morph. Can you talk a little bit more about value proposition?
Well, first, value proposition is really important to have it right. So we started our company as being a HR assessment, you know, for employees. And, you know, there's a need and a space for assessments. You know, it's probably a $600 million total addressable market in the U.S. But we morphed into predictive analytics, you know, helping companies decrease employee turnover and increasing employee performance, which is a much, much bigger total addressable market, right? So understanding your value proposition is a key part of it. And it's not something that you do only once. You know, like Michael Jordan, who practices his jump shot, you know, every week repeatedly, even though he's fantastic. It's something that you constantly need to exercise and the team really needs to kind of work on. And the third point is that you never know who needs to communicate that and when you need to communicate that. So being able to articulate a strong value proposition can occur at any time. So you may be in an elevator and someone just asks you literally in the elevator.
Got it. And sometimes, I think you can tell us that sometimes an elevator story really is an elevator story.
Our offices was in the same building at Silicon Valley Bank. And I remember riding the elevator. We were on the 5th floor, and I walked in, and someone introduced me to the Silicon Valley banker. And I literally had from the ground floor to the 5th floor to provide an interesting value proposition pitch to Silicon Valley so that they would take my call later on. So these things need to be fresh and they be ready to trigger.
And the other point you made is that this is not something that just is owned by the CEO.
It is the whole company's responsibility. So, now, as an example, we really wanted to kind of talk to the folks at Accenture in the HR division of Accenture, and, you know, tried for a long time to get in there, didn't know any contacts. So finally, I went to LinkedIn, and I saw on LinkedIn that my executive assistant, who worked 50 feet from me, her sister, now headed the whole Accenture HR division. And I asked her, so Darcy, why haven't you brought this up and introduced me to your sister? And she said, no, I've been talking to her about People Answers the whole time. And, you know, I've been able to really explain to her what we do and what's important. And now I think she's ready to talk to you guys.
As part of the workshop, you had us answering a lot of different questions across these 6 key areas. Defensibility was interesting. There were so many key pieces that. What's your thought about what's most important in terms of having a truly defensible business?
So defensible is about how fast can the competition catch up with you, right? So everyone has bigger competitors than they are, and there's always someone that has more funds, more people, more resources to compete with you. So how easy is it for the competition to throw a team together and come after you? And there's a series of factors that impact that. You know, do you have a patent? How many lines of code is associated with kind of doing what you do? How long would it take for you to recreate, what the solution that you already have? But it's basically about putting moats around what you do in a way that it becomes easier for the competition to acquire you than it is for them to try to knock you off and replicate you.
Excellent. And we then got into thoughts around scalability. And I thought there were a couple of key interesting points about that one. Talk a little bit about, you mentioned, the code you have and the moats you build. How does scalability play into this space?
Yeah, so part of what drives scalability is this concept of configuration, not customization. So customization is when you have to deploy a software developer to write code to make a solution unique to a customer. And in the enterprise B2B world, every customer is different. They all have different cultures. They all have different needs, perceived needs, and they want a solution that is specific for them. So there's two ways to go about doing that. You can deploy software developers who kind of customize a solution, but as we know, software developers are very expensive and they take a fairly lengthy period of time to get things done. The other alternative is to have customizable software. So customization is about being able to go into the back end of your system and kind of maybe some screens are not very pretty but functional, and you have a client administrator who can come in and throw some switches, and the outcome is a solution that looks very specific to your customer but did not require any work from a software developer.
So it might be shorter for someone to do a one-off customization than the investment that might take to do a configuration system. But at the end of the day, that investment's well worth it because now you've got some scale and some leverage.
Absolutely. So customization may take a one-man month of effort, where making that feature customizable so that it can be turned on and off or configured via a back-end system may take 2 months of software development effort. You always have much higher ROI by making it configurable, because that means that the next customer who wants that, you can throw some switches and have that functionality available.
Very cool. You also got us a little introspective. So you said to the room, all right, you're going to double your revenue. And then you wanted us to think about the implications of what it meant to double our revenue.
Yeah, so there's technical implications, so servers and things like that. There's also customer support implications, right? So as your customer base grows, how do you ensure that the later customers have the same overwhelming satisfaction with the services and product that you offer that the earlier customers have? And you have to be very purposeful about that part of the process. So at PeopleAnswers, we develop what we call Client Value Index, which is basically a series of measurements that at any one point in time, you can quantify the value that the customer is getting. And we quantify that. We have a number, very much like a stock number. Right? So we could run that once a day, once a week, and get a measurement of the value. But what's interesting is that then you start kind of aggregating these individual measurements. So maybe you have a customer representative who is responsible for 10 customers, and you can look at the average customer value index or the value of that portfolio of clients. And that becomes a way to kind of track values as those groups and kind of create the right incentives for your employees that take care of the customers to achieve the results that you're going after.
And for every one of our companies or for different companies, the client value index might be different for each of these. What are some key elements that might be in that measure that would get set up?
Yeah, there's a good amount of variance there. So for a enterprise B2B, it will be different measurements than for SMB solution. But for example, for us, it was a number of times customers logging in, recommendations that our software is being used. Is the customer using the recommendations to make decisions in their environment? And what are the kind of correlations with outcomes? How many times have we visited the customer and had a face-to-face meeting? So it's a series of measurements, most of them objective, some of them subjective, that you can quantify at any point in time to arrive at a score.
Now, Recurring revenue obviously is in the hearts and minds of everyone that's working at a SaaS workshop. And we talk, obviously, with recurring revenue, there's an awful lot of discussions around churn. And for you, your churn number actually drove your strategy in terms of services versus more SaaS revenue. Talk a little bit about how that your thinking was driven around that.
Yeah, so we started by the premise that a dollar of recurring revenue is more valuable than a dollar of service, than a dollar of product sales, right? So we wanted to drive as much into the recurring revenue dollar as possible. So one of the decisions we made was, you know, for example, not to charge any customization or installation services dollars up front when we had a new company, a new client that came in. So there was basically no installation cost. There was just a recurring revenue cost. So the company, PeopleAnswers, basically subsidized that installation cost, but was able to capture that back through kind of higher recurring revenue. So instead of in year one charging, you know, $10,000 a month of recurring revenue and a one-time $50,000 fee, we entered into a relationship where we were capturing $20,000 a month with no setup fee, and that allowed us to kind of capture a much higher recurring number that by the time that we were in year two or three had a much higher ROI than trying to capture that initial.
And the effectiveness of your strategy then was dependent on the fact that you didn't have a high churn, that if you were losing people too quickly, that would have been a financial burden.
Absolutely. We knew that if we only kept a customer a year, we would have definitely lost money on that customer. Sales cost and setup costs alone were greater than the overall revenue for the year one. But we knew our renewal rates, and we knew that a typical customer would be, you know, a customer for about 10 years or more. So it's okay not to, you know, to lose the money on year one if year two through 10 you're making more than you would otherwise. So it was important for us to do all the right things that resulted in a very high renewal rate.
Outstanding. You also brought a very unique view in how you were looking at competition and how you were representing competition to the external world and the world of investors and potential acquirers and the like. So let's talk a little bit more about how you would kind of set up your view of competition.
Yeah, my point there was that don't let the competition define the rules of engagement. Define your own rules of engagement, right? So define how you want to compete kind of based on what your value proposition is. So instead of using the competitor's, you know, X and Y axis of kind of things that are important to them, define your own. For example, in PeopleAnswers, we define, you know, X axis as scalability. So on one side, whether it's done by a consultant or on the other side done by the software. And on the vertical axis, it was about predictability. So does this really predict the outcomes or not? So by defining the two axes, we're able then to position our competitors in a way that a customer or a prospect or even maybe an investor could clearly recognize, you know, how PeopleAnswers was differentiated in our space.
And that'll be creating the classic 2x2 matrix. And of course, you want to be in the upper right-hand side.
Yep. Magic quadrant.
Always the case. Yeah. And then the key to that then is you've got to get a handle on the ROI of every one of your customers if you're talking about effectiveness and performance and the like. So you want to make sure that you really understand that well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really kind of ties back to value proposition, you know, understanding what are the key values that you want to drive and are those values important to your customer? Not only important, but do they represent, do you help your customers make money or do you help your customers save money, right? So the more you can help them increase their revenue, the more you can help them decrease their operating expenses. And if you're able to quantify that and be able to assign that value to you, the better you are, the more you can command for it, and the higher renewal rate you're going to get.
And you led the efforts with the team to make sure those were constantly being focused up by your team to measure and learn the results, the ROI.
Yeah. So we had a very strong value proposition about decreasing attrition in an employee base, and by increasing revenues, by increasing the productivity of employees. So what we did was develop a methodology that captured base rates kind of going into a new customer, and then periodically revisited the outcomes so that we could quantify the true reduction in employee turnover, the true increase in revenues due to better performing employees.
And it started day one. Renewals are not a day 364 effort. They're a day one effort.
Absolutely. So that's the realization that we start working on a renewal the first day that we sign that contract, not a few days before that contract comes up for renewal. And you have to be purposeful about it. You know, we develop a full methodology for kind of the different phases that the customer goes into, you know, setup, launch, expansion, maintenance. And we quantify the behaviors that we wanted the customer to be demonstrating during those phases. And we had, you know, very specific, purposeful programs to drive performance during those different stages.
Terrific. Well, not to be too simplistic in things that are important, but as we wrap up this conversation, it's very clear to many, many in this room that exits matter. And what are your thoughts on, like, you know, the key elements of an exit?
So one of the things that leads to great outcomes is really kind of the notion of being deep, not wide. You know, all companies that execute well, you know, have customers that come to you and say, well, can you do one more thing for us? Can you add one more amount of functionality? And it turns out that at the exit point, it's more important to be deeper than it is to be wider. Yes, from time to time, enterprise software companies will buy platform companies, but those don't occur very often. They're much more likely kind of buying a kind of a point solution that they can integrate directly into one of their platform companies. So by being deep and by being really kind of the leader in the space for that one vertical, you have a lot more value, you create more value, and you're more valuable to the acquirer by kind of focusing your development and your efforts and kind of being deep in the space.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, there will be companies that are going to be platforms, and there will be companies that are going to become unicorns, but we're really talking about the majority of companies should really think about what it is that they're going to get good at and who might be their potential acquirers, perhaps. Well, Gab, this was fantastic. From a Georgian Partners perspective, we always talk about being analytical in your business. It's one of our seven principles of applied analytics, and there isn't any doubt in my mind that the leadership and focus on the numbers and the analytics you brought to your company and to everyone today as part of this workshop has been really well received. So thank you so much for your time.
Glad to be here, John. Thanks for the opportunity, and thank you for Georgian Partners for having me.
Excellent. Thank you.